losing your virginity as a term needs to be phased out and replaced with your sexual debut.
I love that. You think that's
like
insane?
Sexual debut?
It feels so avant-garde, so romantic. My sexual debut. It's like my first night on Broadway. It kind of makes me want to sing a little bit. Hey, everybody, I'm Tim Miller.
And I'm Cam Caskey, and this is FY Pod, the Bulwark show where we talk about young people stuff and breaking news and investigative reports and really cool things. I want to hop right in today because my personal friend, Benjamin Netanyahu, just did something that I think is a little scary. You know, one of the first conversations Tim and I had was about foreign control over the content that people consume on TikTok and how TikTok and the way that that algorithm works is kind of scary. And Bibi Netanyahu, in his recent star-making turn at the UN when everybody walked out on him and he told a joke and told everybody to laugh, he touted a new ability to control TikTok as, quote, a weapon. Let's take a look.
We're going to have to use the tools of battle. You know, the weapons change over time. You can't fight today with swords. That doesn't work very well, okay? And you can't fight with cavalry. That doesn't work very well.
Both good points, by the way.
Things, you know, like drones, things like that. I won't get into that. But we have to fight with the weapons that apply to the battlefields in which we're engaged. And the most important ones are the social media. And the most important purchase that is going on right now is class
followers.
TikTok, number one. And I hope it goes through because it's it can be consequential. Mm-hmm. And the other one, what's the other one that's most important?
X.
That's very good. And, you know, so we have to talk to Elon. He's not an enemy. He's a friend. We should talk to him. Now, if we can get those two things, we get a lot. And I could go on other things, but that's not the point right now. We have to fight the fight.
You know, I've been so sick of that anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that the Jews control the media. And it's really refreshing for the prime minister of the state of Israel to come out in the name of the Jewish people explicitly to be like, yeah, let's control the media.
This TikTok thing, and, you know, I should say really at the quick of the start, as we're taping this, Trump and Netanyahu are having a press conference right now at the White House where they're talking about how they think they have another deal. We'll see. I'm in a show don't tell mode for Trump when it comes to Russia and Israel. He's had a lot of fails on this front. So if there's additional news on that, we'll do another video for you guys. But as far as the TikTok thing is concerned, it's really bad. And I, you know, you like to just own your potential misses, your misses. Look at that. I have a miss and I even had to caveat it because the ego gets in the way. The ego gets in the way when you have a miss. You caveat it as a potential miss. Back when the first TikTok ban was happening, I was authentically worried about the Chinese impact on the algorithm. There were additionally some other people that were worried that the algorithm was putting up too much pro-Palestine, anti-Israel information and feeding that to Americans. And there was kind of like a coalition in the Senate of people that were against the TikTok, wanted to do the TikTok ban, some because they cared about, you know, our greatest geopolitical foe in China controlling the algorithm and controlling the minds of our youth, and others because they wanted the algorithm to be more pro-Israel. I believe it was Mitt Romney who basically said that explicitly at one point about Israel. And I was hesitant to accept that. Like, I felt like it was a bit of an anti-Semitic trope. And I was like, well, the China is the real threat here. And I had some friends who were pushing back on me in private. And they're saying, you know what, Tim, actually, I think this has a lot more to do with Israel. And I was like, I don't know, guy, don't start going crazy. Don't start going all anti-Semite on me, you know. And here we are. The prime minister of Israel just says it. Prime Minister of Israel just says it. Like, we need TikTok algorithm to be better, to be more nice towards Israel. As a weapon.
We can't use swords anymore. We need to use the app where it used to just be a bunch of fucking people dancing. Listen, the Chinese control of TikTok had so many problems with it. I'm sure you see those videos where it's like, here's what they're giving kids in China on TikTok. And it's like videos of how to do math better. And it's videos of how to succeed as an adult. And then, you know, the videos that are getting peddled to the kids in the US are rotting our brains, making us stupid. Yeah, and I'm not acting like that's some sort of accident. But when there's someone who's the leader of a foreign country owning publicly and touting with an ear-to-ear grin that this is going to be a propaganda tool, it's completely unacceptable. And it's important for us to hold the Biden administration to account and say they played a part in this. The everything that's going on with TikTok right now, now it's owned by like Oracle or some shit and the Murdochs.
I want to get into like, that.
The Biden administration paved the way for this.
Yeah, we can't hold the Biden administration accountable. I agree with that. Plenty to critique. But boy, what the Trumps are doing here is on another level. And I do think that like sometimes because there's rage at BB, rightfully, and rage at Biden, rightfully, you know, it's like everybody's like, we know Trump is bad. So like, why talk about it? Like that's in some quarters of the left is like is a common thing. And so I just want to say that's not how we do things here at the Bulwark. I just want to explicitly say this thing. Like the layers of corruption and danger here on this TikTok purchase, I don't think it's stuck in with people. Because in addition to the Prime Minister of Israel explicitly saying he wants to use this as a weapon and he's happy about the sale, Trump is selling this, as you mentioned, to Oracle. That's the Ellisons. It's the same family that's buying CBS that is going to put Barry Weiss in at CBS. They're selling it to, as you mentioned, the Murdochs. They're selling it to Mark Andreessen and Andreessen Horowitz. That's a big Silicon Valley donor who has a ton of exposure on AI and crypto. He doesn't want the government to do anything to regulate AI or crypto. And these guys got the fucking biggest sweetheart deal in history. The TikTok deal was they valued it at $14 billion. If you ask like smart analysts and said if TikTok was on the open market, what would it have gotten from like an American bidder? $100 billion is the number that was going around. So you have to ask yourself why. Who is on the back end of this? And I don't do this in like the Jews are on the back end of this. I don't know. It's Chinese, I think. It could be part of Trump's trade deal with China. Could be part of something related to, you know, what's happening with UAE and the chip deals and how Trump got $2 billion from them. I don't, Israel clearly could be involved based on what Bibi said. All I know is that it is a corrupt deal. It is not an accident that friends of this administration, friends of Likud, friends of some of those, you know, Sharia law oil barons in the Middle East are now taking over this algorithm. They're going to be able to line their pockets with the money that they make from selling additional shares on this. And they're going to have control over an algorithm that has a huge impact on like not just young people, but a lot of Americans. And it is extremely, extremely alarming.
And it's easy to forget, since TikTok is its own thing and CBS is its own thing, that this is all part of the same larger narrative. What happened to Stephen Colbert, what happened to Jimmy Kimmel with Sinclair and Nexstar, and the fact that standing up to them actually worked and should have sent a message across the board that standing up to the Trump administration can yield success. But it's all the same story. All of these things, these back-end deals with Trump and all these people who are trying to repress free speech, it's the same genre. It's the same larger narrative. It's the same function of this administration to violate our First Amendment rights. And it could be more subtle sometimes. It could be more complex sometimes.
Yeah, and just to control the narrative, violate our rights. But even if they're not violating our rights, it's not as bad, but it's extremely bad that they are going to have all these powerful propaganda tools.
And it's not like Bibi Netanyahu is just some pro-Israel guy with a lot of corruption who is under criminal investigation repeatedly in the state of Israel. He's also a right-wing nationalist. He tweeted out that when a strong right-wing leader comes into power, the left-wing deep state is always going to mobilize against him. Bibi isn't woke because there's some great healthcare and LGBTQ, well, mostly great rights in the state of Israel. Bibi is a fundamentally right-wing politician. He's the same type of guy as Trump. Mind you, I think he's a little better at messaging, and that's, you know, considering the fact that the state of Israel has become a global pariah after a huge amount of international goodwill over the past couple of years.
He also seems to put in like military people in charge of the military, which is pretty good as compared to Trump. Just again, if we're just grading them man to man, I think you'd rather have the people that Bibi's put in charge than like a weekend Fox and Friends co-host.
With that military, I think that it's just a very different set of priorities. But regardless, I want to use this to transition into something that was very interesting, because I texted Tim a tweet and I said, this is interesting. With this sort of implicit, maybe we talk about this on the show. And I guess he was like in transit and missed it or something and like clicked on it and said, oh, I'll deal with that later. And then he sent me the same exact tweet like 3 hours later and said, we should discuss. And I was like, hey, Tim, sent you this above. But okay. First, Let's hear a word from our sponsors.
Maybe one of the reasons, Cameron, that it didn't sink in with me that you had already texted me the clip we're about to discuss, and I texted it right back to you, is because, you know, sometimes on the weekends I like to enjoy some refreshments. You know, I like to enjoy some things that chill me out a little bit, including something from our newest sponsor, Corebred Hemp. Maybe you've tried everything under the sun for the peace of mind, but you might want to try Cornbread Hemp CBD gummies. I haven't tried those, but I've tried their beverages. And let me tell you, the beverages are yummy. And I appreciate that the person that wrote the script did not make any jokes about how old I am in writing it. I need my peace of mind more than usual lately, which is why I've been reaching for these great federally legal CBD and THC beverages before I doze off, or as an alternative to drinking bourbon and cokes before I head out to a live event. Cornbread Hemp CBD gummies are made to help you feel better, whether it's stress, discomfort, or just needing a little relaxation. They only use the best part of the hemp plant, the flower, for the purest and most potent CBD. All products are third-party lab-tested and USDA organic to ensure safety and purity. Right now, FYPod listeners can save 30% off their first order. Just head to cornbreadhemp.com/FYPod and use FYPod at checkout. That's cornbreadhemp.com/FYPod and use code FYPod. Let's see that little thing we were texting each other.
There it is on screen for everybody. So basically, there's this guy, Andrew Callahan, who runs a very, very popular media channel called Channel 5 News. They do a lot
more popular than us. How's he doing compared to us, would you say?
How is he doing? He's immensely popular. He did take a year or so off because there were a lot of allegations that he was a sexual pervert in a very inappropriate way. But then he came back because when people get canceled, it turns out if they just kind of keep it on the low and apologize, they can normally come back. And cancel culture is very often Streisand affected by people freaking out about it about themselves. But anyway, Andrew does a lot of really interesting work in communities that are underserved by the media and communities that where stories need to be told that are not necessarily the thing that's going to be the big hook on the mainstream media. And they had a 3-hour interview with Hunter Biden where Hunter Biden was screaming about George Clooney and calling George Clooney a piece of shit. And they have some interesting stuff. And they did an interview recently with Pete Buttigieg. Some people call him Mayor Pete. I think he tried to transition away from being called Mayor Pete, but I don't know why, because I think it's like a cool nickname, Mayor Pete.
Better than Secretary Pete?
Yeah, it's less syllables. And Andrew put it out on the subscribers-only channel that they have and released a statement basically saying, I got a lot of negative audience feedback because I did not press Pete on AIPAC, which is why we transitioned to this from the Israel talk. He didn't press Pete hard enough on taking money from AIPAC. A lot of his audience got pissed off because of that. And now he's considering not releasing it at all. And Tim had some thoughts about that.
Well, we also have some thoughts. We haven't seen the clips, we should say. And if by the time this airs, he's published it, we should put a little bit in here so folks can watch. I think that this is this goes kind of to what I was just talking about earlier about there are some quarters on the left where like it is just it's more in vogue to like make fun of Democrats and talk about how about Democrats' failings and talk about the way that Democrats are not morally righteous enough on, across all these various verticals, whether that be Gaza or trans rights or whatever. And sometimes I agree with the critiques and sometimes I don't. Right. But if you are positioned in such a place where your audience demands that you eviscerate a popular Democrat and you build up Hunter Biden, I feel like your priorities are a little off. Okay. And I, just as a media outlet, like I have people yell at me about stuff that I post all the time. You should see the comments under the Ezra Klein podcast from last week or the Joe Manchin podcast. And that's fine. That's okay. You don't need to feed the audience comfort food all the time.
That's the big thing is, you know, to talk about audience capture, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm on a lot of Bulwark comment sections and Reddits, and there's a lot of people that get pissed off to, you know, you talking to Joe Manchin and things that other commentators at the network say that doesn't relate to people. And my message, I don't really engage in those conversations because I'm, you know, internal and biased and like, you know, I don't want to throw my hat into that. But my whole thing is like part of why something like Bulwark or something like Channel 5 is able to be what it is being uninhibited by audience capture.
yeah.
is being able to operate sometimes in contrast with what your audience wants. And that doesn't mean that I like everything that comes out of the mouth of every guest that goes on certain shows that I watch and am familiar with, but there's a degree to which it's the responsibility of independent media to not be just pumping shit out to feed their audience the slop that they want, to be having, because then suddenly when you're just doing audience capture, you're not independent anymore. You're dependent just on an audience as opposed to a giant network.
Yeah, I agree with that. And in addition to the audience capture point, like circling back to my original point, it's pretty telling if your audience capture is your audience, you are on the left broadly, and your audience is demanding that you crush mainstream Democrats. Like that is what they want, right? Because to me, that is like just a microcosm of why we're here. And it's like, okay, yeah, criticize Democrats. It's just as bad if your audience capture is like, oh, you're only supposed to say that everything Joe Biden and Kamala Harris did was great and we love you and the K-Hive is unbelievable. Like that's bad audience capture too. But it's telling if your audience wants you to just crush the Democrats and in point, do service to the existing regime that is going after everybody's rights right now, that is, you know, putting immigrants into an archipelago of camps, that's sending masked agents to hassle and go after protesters. Like, that's what you're doing. You're doing service to them if you can't have a Democrat on your platform and have them do well without your audience being mad at you. Like the whole thing is crazy. And again, I haven't seen this clip, and I don't, you know, Pete got in a little trouble about something that he said about Israel. I think it was on Pod Save America. And then he kind of backtracked in a separate interview. So I'm sure that's what he asked him about. But it's like, okay.
No, I don't. I straight up just don't think he asked him about it. And can I just say one more thing? Is like, interviewing people's fucking hard. Like,
yeah.
When you're talking to someone, like, just going for gotchas is possible. You can do it sometimes. But I was interviewing a politician who I have some very, very staunch differences on in regards to certain topics, and I ended up only talking about the things we see eye to eye on, because it was just like, and this is not me saying I'm some sort of brilliant journalist, I've never positioned myself for that, but it's kind of fucking hard to like wanna approach, and I think that journalists, especially independent ones, should do that and ask the hard-hitting questions. I think that there's some journalists who I absolutely fucking despise, but one thing that I can give them credit for here and there is their ability to ask tough questions to politicians that other journalists wouldn't. But also just on like a human level, it's kind of fucking hard, man.
It is hard. It's hard for me. I try, you know, I think I'm pretty good at asking people hard questions, even people I'm aligned with. I guess my point is like the broader thing is like, it is challenging. Give people a little bit of grace. But to me, like the more telling thing is you get into yourself into a pretty bad, like, I guess the one thing I try to do is I want to ask people tough questions, and I want to ask them questions that are in the news. And there are things I feel obligated to ask them that I'm going to ask them about. You know, when Biden people come on, I ask them about the Biden age stuff. Do I want to talk about it? No, but like we were here because of it. So I have to ask them about it. But like you get to a place where if you're a Democrat, if you're a mainstream Democrat is trying to do well, and the right wing media treats you like you're a monster, you know, that has no values and no rights. And the mainstream media is really tough on you because they don't want to seem like they're biased. So they butch up. And then the left wing media has you on, and like the fans want them to just eviscerate you for the left. Like you can't win. Like you can't win. Like you put these guys in such a bad place, and it's just like,
you know, okay. There's few organizations in the country that are not explicitly just Project 2025 aligned that are more offensive to me as a person than AIPAC. And that's largely because AIPAC uses my own identity that is genetically coded into my DNA as an excuse to do things that I am not aligned with. But I wouldn't ask Mayor Pete about AIPAC if he and I were talking, because that is not something that I consider one of the things to talk to Mayor Pete about right now. And I think that that's an important distinction to make, is like the stuff that I would want to talk to Pete about right now, it's not exactly that. I mean, listen, I had plenty to say, including on MSNBC, about Pete's answer on Israel stuff on PodSafe. But I, as someone who's always asking politicians questions about this type of stuff, don't know if that would have come up for me. And that's not because it isn't an issue that compels me morally. It's because there's other stuff I would have wanted to talk about. The one thing I'll say before we move on to our final topic, really,
I want to gas ourselves up one really quick time, but before we move to the final topic, but you go first.
I think there's you know, fuck the Jews element of why plenty of people are really upset about something like AIPAC. But But I think that the narrative that that is the only thing that makes people upset about it is extraordinarily manipulative and exploitative of the very real form of hate that is anti-Semitism. And I think that what I say to people who are like, why is it all about AIPAC? Why is it all about AIPAC? Is if there was an organization that did exactly what AIPAC did in the US government, spending record amounts of money to kick out people they don't like, Democrats, like if there was an organization just like that, who was operating explicitly in the interests of the CCP or Russia, I think you would look at them differently.
Well, of course. I mean, Israel is our ally. It's a little bit different. I don't know. I think Qatar is a decent example. Qatar puts a lot of money into the U.S. I guess that's my point on the AIPAC thing. It's like, I wish – it's like, oh, if you're only asked about AIPAC, you're never asking anybody, like, what about the money that came in for Qatar? I mean, Qatar's put in as much money into as Israel into American politics recently. But anyway, like, that's besides the point. My point, I guess, just – one thing on the AIPAC thing since you brought it up, and then I'll gas us up. I was watching our girls over at I Had It Pod, and they're interviewing Jeff Duncan, who's a good dude, never Trumper guy, lieutenant governor, running for governor of Georgia. And the host, she's just like butchering the dude and just going after him. Like, are you going to take AIPAC money? Are you going to take AIPAC money? Are you going to take AIPAC money? I think she asked him 5 or 6 times. And Jeff Duncan should have had an answer to that. I think the reality is he does state politics in Georgia. He's never run for federal office. He used to be a Republican. He switched sides. It's not as much of a flashpoint. Well, I mean, Zohran
got fucking hammered on Israel as the mayor of New York City.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's true. That's a fair point. I was going to get to Zohran next. I would also say that Zohran talked about that a lot, like just in fairness. Like, Zohran got asked about Israel because he talked about Gaza a lot, which is totally fine and appropriate, right? But Jeff Duncan wasn't talking about Israel at all. And so she's like hammering him on this. And I think it's fair to be like, wait a minute. I mean, dude is running for governor of Georgia. Like, Georgia is not selling weapons to Israel, at least so far. I don't know. Maybe Ron DeSanctimonious is looking into that in Florida. But right now, it's a federal government issue. And, you know, to ask him once, he's going to take AIPAC money. Okay, I think it's a little weird, but like, okay. To like ask him 6 times and like bully him, you just see it's touchy. So my same point is the Andrew Callahan thing. It's on one hand, he doesn't ask Pete at all. She asked Jeff Duncan 6 times about this. And it's kind of like we can find a balance on all this. And it does become a little bit weird if it's like, okay, is that the only foreign policy issue you asked Jeff Duncan about? You just asked him only about AIPAC money? You didn't ask him about money coming from other countries? Like, to me, that becomes a little bit, I raise my eyebrow at that a little bit. I'm not saying it's anti-Semitism. I'm just saying that we should step back and have a little bit of a, like, a more sensible convo about this.
It's something that people are very morally concerned about right now. And it speaks to a big issue with, I think, campaign finance and just the thought that this organization that operates solely in the interest of a right-wing nationalist foreign governments military is. But for me, and I wouldn't be, you know, really going after a governor for that type of thing. But my response to that is just like, if you're going to take money, and this is more about the Pete with Andrew Callahan.
But he hadn't taken money. No, Jeff Duncan, he said, it'd be one thing if he had taken $1 million and you asked about it, but it's like hypothetically. Yeah.
This is not a retort to what you're saying about the governor. This is a thought that I was actually going to share while we were talking about the Pete thing. Because again, I wouldn't have asked Pete about Israel stuff probably. But if I did, like, if you're taking money as a politician, you better know how to fucking answer the question, why are you taking it? And what is this money doing to influence the decisions that you're making? You don't get a free pass to just take money from people. Judge people by their donors. And if a politician is willing to take money from an organization that has an agenda, they should be able to explain in clear and sincere terms why and what it means to them. And I think that that's fair.
I think it's fair too. I also think that, and again, this isn't even to pick on the I Had a person. I just think it's fair to say that, like, I don't think it's crazy to raise your eyebrows at, like, why are you making the litmus test this one group and saying, I want to make sure you're not beholden to them, which was like one of the questions of this interview, when the dude's running for governor and like got ran out of lieutenant governor. Like, how, what would even be being beholden to them mean? Like, it just, everybody should just be, I think, a little bit more precise about what they're talking about in this space. And that includes myself.
Yeah. I also think he could have just said no, but.
But he didn't even think it was coming. Like, I don't, again, like, you're running for governor of and also, by the way, the AIPAC funny thing is, if we're going to do this, you're going to say, you could have just said no. The people that get mad about AIPAC money stuff, it's not exactly clear always. It's not just like, they're not just counting like money from the AIPAC treasury going to a group. Like, they're talking about like they do fundraising for individual people, right? So like if Jeff Duncan raised money from like a moderate Democrat who lives outside of Atlanta, who's Jewish, who also gives money to AIPAC, is that taking AIPAC money? Does he have to vet the check that he gets from every individual person to make sure that person didn't
get... No, I think it's a matter of if you're being given money directly by the organization.
Okay, but that's not how critics of people that are taking AIPAC money count that money, though, oftentimes. That's not actually accurate. So I just think that everybody in the space should be a little bit less, just be more precise about what you're asking him, like about what you're asking people, what they want. And back to gassing ourselves up, this was like the case of the Zoran, and when we did the Zoran interview, right? Like, I was very candid with him that, like, when you were going to come on, we were just like, look, I'm going to disagree with you on this thing and that thing. The other thing, we're going to ask about a couple of these things. And like, we asked about it. He had a chance to answer it. And like, that's fine. You know what I mean? And like, it was all like his vibes were very high, like throughout the whole thing. And
he said what he meant, and he meant what he said. You can't say that about every politician, and I respect him for it. And speaking of things that I mean, I would like to thank one of our sponsors, to whom I am very morally compelled to support, ExpressVPN. This show is sponsored by ExpressVPN. True or false? Incognito mode makes you invisible on the internet. The answer is, in case you couldn't guess this, false. Most people have no idea, but your browsing history can still be monitored and even recorded unless you use ExpressVPN. Oh, shit. ExpressVPN lets you change your online location so you can control where you want Netflix to think you're located. They have servers in over 100 countries, so you can gain access to thousands of new shows and never run out of stuff to watch. I wanted to watch The Notebook, which I watch several times a week, a few weeks ago, because that left US Netflix at the end of August, but it's still kicking around in Australia, where they also got rid of guns. ExpressVPN also keeps you private and secure by rerouting all your traffic through an encrypted tunnel. And I assure you, I know exactly what that means. It's easy to use. Just fire up the app and click one button to change locations, and it works on all your devices, phones, laptops, tablets, smart TVs, and more. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/fypod. That is expressvpn.com/fypod to find out how you can get up to 4 extra months free. ExpressVPN.com/FYPod. Thank you so much, ExpressVPN.
Can I tell you how dumb I am? I needed ExpressVPN in Toronto this weekend to watch a football game. My team lost. Don't want to talk about that. And I was kind of in a panic at the airport and downloaded ExpressVPN. I knew they were a sponsor, but like I was in a hurry. And, you know, I need to get it all downloaded before we got onto the tarmac.
And you fucking didn't use our code?
I didn't use our code.
Okay, well, audience, be better than Tim.
I didn't use our code. So ExpressVPN, know that I paid full freight, and I hope that you appreciate us more from that. You had another topic you wanted to get into.
Yes, real quick, before we let you all go, I wanted to do one of our fun topics. I'm trying to force some funner stuff into the show because Tim and I funner? Are too funny. Tim and I are too funny off camera to not let you all in on it as well. People seem to be getting more obsessed with virginity. Is it because Gen Z isn't getting laid? Is it right-wing purity culture? I don't know, but what I do know is virginity has really been having a comeback in reality television. We've got the UK's Virgin Island, TLC's Virgins, and now Hulu's Are You My First? So I want to show you the trailer real quick of one of these shows.
This summer, 12 virgins are on a journey of self-discovery.
Being a young adult in this day and age, it's difficult.
People see it as a joke.
I don't know if I'm going to be doing it right.
I'm worried about hurting.
It's just awkward.
What's going to happen on this island is mind-blowing.
With expert help.
My lucky boy.
They'll meet temptation.
I just don't want anyone to touch me.
Chase connection.
Don't make you nervous.
And experience intimacy.
I'm like a different virgin there. I'm closer to losing it.
Woohoo! Would you like to move to the bed?
Wow. So then there's obviously Are You My First on Hulu. The reality show centers on, quote, the largest group of eligible virgins ever assembled. Clearly, they have never been to a Turning Point USA conference. But Tim,
there are no fucking virgins there. They're fingering all over the place at the Turning Point USA conferences.
Well, then there's another conversation to be had about what exactly virgin means, and we don't have enough time to get to that.
We might. Do you got somewhere to be? You got somewhere to be? You don't
want
to talk
about
fingering?
No, I'm fucking down. Dude, I always want these. We squeezing this into 30 is so tough. Yeah, I just wanted to say before we get into that, like it used to be that Lucy and Ricky were sleeping in separate beds, but everybody in real life was fucking the shit out of each other.
Desi.
What?
Lucy and Desi, I think. Not
hey,
Lucy, and
Lucy you're so fine. Hey, Ricky, you're so fine. You're so fine. Fuck you. Syracuse professor Bob Thompson has pointed out people on television were having a lot less sex than people in real life. That's completely flipped. And I feel like you've got all these TV shows where you're like Euphoria, where you're watching these teens fuck each other. And there's so much sex and all this stuff. And it's just not translating to real life. In terms of this kind of comeback of talking about and hyperfixating on virginity, what's your take? Like, what do you think this is all about?
I think I probably would have had some more kind of cosmic narrative take about virginity and what it all means and about, you know, natalism and our declining birth rate and trad culture on the right. And not knowing that you brought up this topic, about a week and a half ago, I was with some friends and we were at the house. And as happens, Tyler sometimes will have people over. They'll hang out. They will have maybe a THC beverage or two. And I will sit there on my computer and work and prep for podcasts for all of you people while they watch terrible television. And one of the shows that they turned on recently was one of the aforementioned shows about virginity. It's not wasn't the one you showed in the trailer there, but it's a different show. And so, having now seen that, I it's a gimmick. Like the people were virgins, but like kind of. I mean, it does, like the question of what is a virgin does really come into play here. I mean, they're pretty slutty for virgins. They're kind of slutty virgins. Like they weren't, the people on the show were like, there were a lot of hot people and there were people that were, you know, some of them had like done everything but, or like they had little issues with kind of vaginal tightening, or they like, I think there was even a born again virgin on there if memory serves. And so I to me, the question is, why do we think the audience is interested in this? Because the actual competitors, I guess, whatever you'd call it, on the reality show didn't seem to like fit an archetype of like trad wife or incel or whatever.
Well, it's interesting you say that because so this young woman named Ida, who was interviewed for, I think it was the Wire article that I was reading, said, my mom was like, I'll literally pay you to go on dates. And I said, you don't need to pay me. Find me a non-Republican in Orange County. She couldn't do it. And that's interesting to me because I do wonder if it's just kind
there's
of
there's no resistance. Jared in Orange County. Jared from Saturday's FY Pod, the Ole Miss, the Ole Miss diamond in the rough. There's no Jareds in Orange County.
I really think that there's something to be said. I don't know if it's kind of like a resistance, blue sky thing. The thought that a lot of young women want to avoid sex like this. Because of the attacks on reproductive rights. But I do think that that is definitely factoring into a lot of people's decision making, especially because of the way that it shifts gender roles beyond just the policy. It shifts the narrative of the power and control men can assert over women. Some guy in the same article that I read, they were interviewing virgins, who might have been part of some study or whatever, said, I don't really believe in gender roles. Sounds like my kind of guy already. Let's go to the next part. But I believe that the man is to be the head of the family and that, you know, the woman is there to be a helpmate. He told the interviewer in a perfect description of believing in traditional gender roles, and the reporter's expression scrunched in discomfort. So I think what you're seeing with these reality shows and with virginity being centered in the narrative, again, is just like how people don't want to have sex for more than just like a purity thing, more like the social issues that we're facing right now, not being particularly sexy ones. There was a Magdalene Taylor, a sexual culture critic and editor at Playboy, said there are a lot of other cultural reasons that young people are not having sex. They don't really correlate all to conservative politics or religion or a lack of awareness about sexuality. I think a lot of young people are trading these usual markers of adulthood for a more digitized life. We're having fewer in-person social interactions and sex is a natural part of that.
I have one more virgin take. People need to have sex. This is maybe very controversial opinion. Maybe some people might not like this, but I think like having sex is a priority that people should have in their lives. It's not something they should feel guilty about. And it is good for your mental health. It's good for the procreation of the species. We're wired to want to have sex. And there's nothing wrong or shameful about it. And I think that some of our ancillary social problems we're dealing with is because people aren't having sex enough. And so this is not me saying that the young ladies in those stories who have to deal with these horrible men should be whatever, doing, you know, giving them sex out of charity or because they feel obligated to. I do not think that. But we need to find a solution to this. And maybe this is the one area where I can be pro AI. Maybe we need, maybe we do in fact need AI sex dummies. I don't know if that will do it. I don't know if that's probably not fulfilling enough.
Sex, the reason we need sex is human connection. And no matter how smart some of these AIs get.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. That's a good point. I was just spitballing. You're right. I retract. I don't even want to rebut. What's the solution then, Cameron? What is the solution? Actually, I'm going to read the ad for our last sponsor. What you think about what the solution is going to be to the fact that people aren't having enough sex, that's creating a lot of ancillary societal problems. One way to help you get sex is by taking care of your skin. Good news. This show is sponsored by OneSkin. I love OneSkin so much. I've been getting the straight bros around Louisiana. You might notice Dante, our producer, is just down in New Orleans. You might notice that more straight men around town are moisturizing right now. And that's because of the one man campaign that I've been on to get straight heterosexual men to moisturize their face. And we're starting to see some differences already. And if you're going to do that, why not start with OneSkin? Known for cult favorites like OS One Body, OS One Face, and OS One Eye, OneSkin stands out for their science-first approach, delivering hydration, barrier support, and powerful longevity benefits in a single step. At the core is their patented OS One Peptide, the first ingredient proven to target senescent cells, the root cause of wrinkles, crepiness. You don't want crepey skin, Cam. Very important. And loss of elasticity. Makes you start to look old. Nothing wrong with looking old, but... you know, why not? Why not fight off the elasticity and crepiness as long as possible? OneSkin has also attracted A-list fans from Katy Perry. Even Katy Perry is doing it. To Jennifer Aniston. Jennifer Aniston looks amazing. OneSkin is the first skin longevity company targeting cellular aging to keep your skin and scalp looking and acting younger for longer. For a limited time, you can try OneSkin with 15% off using code FYPODCAST. We're adding the cast at the end on this one. At oneskin.co, that's 15% off oneskin.co, code FYPODCAST. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Try OneSkin today. Your future self will thank you. What are we going to do besides moisturizing to get people?
No, I need to get on OneSkin and I need to start taking care of my skin because right now I do have a skincare plan that's really good, which is never drinking. That is very good for your skin, but I need to do more because I want to look supple and twinkish and soft in my wedding photos. After my wedding, I might stop taking care of my skin, but until then I want to look boyish.
Smart, supple.
Anyway, we don't have the time because it's going to take a real minute to do the trolling of the left that I wanted to do. But I just had this like slideshow that's like one of those Instagram carousels with the information on it that was saying that virginity as a term needs to be losing your virginity as a term needs to be phased out and replaced with your sexual debut. And I thought that that was kind of,
I love insane. That. You think that's
like
insane?
Sexual debut?
It feels so avant-garde, so romantic. My sexual debut. Her first, it's like my first night on Broadway. It kind of makes me want to sing a little bit. I sang the Canadian National Anthem at our live show in Toronto this weekend. People loved it. I don't know, sexual debut. What do you have against it?
So many things. I think that it just sounds goofy. And it's like one of those words that the DNC banned for being too woke, like birthing person.
Yeah.
But I will say, you talking about wanting to sing, when I was dating... FY Pod spinoff channel that you all ought to subscribe to, FY Pod channel contributor and former FY Pod guest Ellie Schnitt. She had a one bedroom apartment.
Is that where you had your sexual debut?
No. This was not my sexual debut. My sexual debut was when I was 15. But she had a one bedroom apartment, and we had to establish a rule, which was as soon as I step into the bedroom from the living room, my Lin-Manuel Miranda voice stays in the living room. In the evening, in the morning, anytime that it is time to be around bed, I couldn't start talking like this because she found it uncomely, and that's her loss.
I find that extremely uncomely. I think it's uncomely is how you say it, but it's also uncomely, I think.
My last word clearly. Here is I saw a movie last night called One Battle After Another, directed by the great Paul Thomas Anderson.
Oh, don't – no spoilers, no spoilers.
No spoilers, no spoilers. But I just want to say, you know, it's a loose adaptation of a Pynchon book. And there's nothing I'm going to say here that is not in the Pynchon book.
I have not read the Pynchon book, though.
This is not going to spoil anything. It really – the way that art can occasionally inspire you, it really inspired me. This is just a message to our audience. Don't be scared.
Love one another.
Sorry?
I said – it's just a message to our audience. And I said love one another. But I'm sorry. You go ahead.
A message to our audience. Don't be afraid of the Trump regime. They're dangerous and they can be scary. And the fascists have the guns and they have the government and they have the material power. But they're going to fucking lose. Like, they can take democracy down with them, but they're going to lose because they are not fighting for anything. Everything they do is just hate, hate, hate. All they have is hate. And the rest of us, the people who are against this, we have love. Donald Trump, Peter Thiel, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Pete Hegseth, these guys will never have real love in their lives. They can have families and children, whatever, but nobody who cheers on Alligator Alcatraz will ever know real love. They are loveless people, and love is what wins no matter how dire things can get. And having real love in our hearts is why we're going to beat them and exile them from civilized society for the rest of their miserable lives. We cannot go quietly into the long, dark night that is coming. Things are going to get a lot worse before they get any better, but we have to hope and we have to love if we are going to mitigate the harm that will be done for generations. And you cannot fear. You have to stand up. With FYPod, I'm Cam Caskey. This is Tim Miller. We'll all be seeing you soon.
I kind of predicted it.
You predicted what?
The message when I said love one another.
Oh, yeah, kind but it was a little bit more revolutionary than that. Yeah. Thank you all, and patronize our sponsors. I'm Cam. Much
I'm
love.
I'm Tim. Peace. Slice.